Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
This is the BBC World Service. My name's Hugh Sykes, and this is part one of After Saddam. I've been visiting Iraq several times a year since the invasion in 2003, and I've just been back to Baghdad. The programme contains one graphic scene.
This is a park by the River Tigris. There are palm trees, there are grassy open spaces, benches to sit on in the shade. And on one side of the park, there's a massive funfair with, I'm told, the second highest Ferris wheel in the entire Middle East. There's candy floss on sale and popcorn. There's distorting mirrors where these boys are having the time of their lives. In this happy park, are you happy?
The life is not good here. Life is very bad.
Which parts of life are very bad?
People get killed because of the explosions, because of the violence.
But it's better now. There are fewer explosions now, aren't there?
Yeah.
But you still have the fear?
Yes.
Do you still think about those days?
Of course. Children dead, blood on the road. Mothers crying.
But here in Zahra Park, hundreds of people, lots of children, happy mood. And Doha was saying there that people look happy, but they're not feeling happy inside.
In Iraq, it's become normal to be afraid. In Baghdad, there are constant reminders of the bad years. Traffic bottlenecked by checkpoints. And many streets are still bleak canyons of concrete blast walls. And it's hard to feel happy inside in a country where 1,000, 2,000, sometimes 3,000 people were killed every month for years. For example, in this sickening scene from Election Day in January 2005.
Hey, breathing trucks!
Suddenly the atmosphere's completely changed. Oh, Christ. The suicide bomb. American helicopters circling overhead. The remains of human beings are lying in the street. There's a dead body over to my right. There's a leg on the other side of the road and another leg on this side of the road. The boot's still attached. And the suicide bomber, all that's left of him is his torso.
We got a torso and we got a head right over here.
Where's his head?
Right up here.
His head, grimly, gruesomely, landed in the road. Somebody's covered it with a cardboard box.
I'd say the head's a good 50 feet away from the body.
Another day, a year later, a Baghdad neighbour, Marlene, was in her small kitchen making me tea and talking about the soaring price of food, in particular the Iraqi pita bread, which is called samoun. Marlene is Christian. The first thing she did when we heard that bang was to cross herself. The building shook, the windows rattled.
Marlene, with a new Arabic expression for me, muzain, no good. Explosions and gunfire were not, though, a constant Baghdad soundtrack, even during the worst years. But in this unpredictable environment, fear flourished. Many people stayed at home as much as they could, and they kept their children confined indoors. Children like a music student, Frand Nashat. He's now a trumpet player in the National Youth Orchestra of Iraq. Last year, they played at the Edinburgh Festival. When I met him in 2008, Farand was 14.
We stay in the house doing nothing. So all I do is just playing on the computer or my instrument, watch TV or do my homeworks. That's it. to play football, a lot of football. Because since I've been a child, when the Iraq has been invasions, I didn't play ball outside ever. Ever. And the second thing I want to do when I go out is ride a bicycle, because I didn't ride a bicycle since 2003. Maybe there is a chance a car come with a heavy machine gun and shoot on the people with no reason.
Have you seen things like that happen?
One time, they killed my uncle. Yeah. He was in the street with his friend, and they come, they call his name, and they took him down.
We don't feel safe. Maybe American kill me, maybe Iraqi people kill me, maybe something come from the sky, maybe kill me, I know.
This is Adnan Alduri. In 2006, I met him by chance. He was pacing up and down, chain-smoking and looking deeply preoccupied. Something had come from the sky. A bullet. It went through the neck of his 10-year-old son, Mohammed.
My son now is not move. 10 years old.
So your son was shot in the neck and now he's paralyzed from the chest down?
Yeah.
So he can only move his head and his arms?
Yeah.
Who shot him?
I don't know.
Where was he when he was shot?
My home, garden of my home.
Who would shoot a child?
I don't know who make bombs, who make the terrorist, who do that, who kill who. We don't know. Yeah, really, we don't know. What's the reason?
There's no bright ending to this. 2 years later, Adnan had a heart attack and died.
We are very tired. Now I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't think. Bombs, kill, we can't walk in the street. And now I live here, I don't feel safe. Maybe anybody in the night maybe come enter and kill me.
I had no telephone number for Adnan's family, who now live up in the north, so I went back to his old office in Baghdad to find colleagues who remembered him and his son.
Adnan died?
Yes.
Do you think it was connected with Mohammed's shooting?
Maybe,
for sure.
And Adnan's son, Mohammed? 5 years after the bullet came from the sky, his father's former colleagues tell me he can still only move his head and his hands.
It was like a white-skinned, beautiful boy. You could hear like thousands of stories similar to Muhammad's one. So it was shocking for us and it was normal for us at the same time.
The American army killed my family, 7 from my family.
And that's one of Adnan's former colleagues, Mayada Mohammed Amin, suddenly telling me, during a battle between insurgents and American troops in South Baghdad, a shell from an American tank hit the car that my family were traveling in when they were out shopping and set it on fire. It killed my mother, my brother, his wife, 2 of their children, and a niece. Only one daughter survived.
My mother, 71. My brother, 38. His... بعد ما عرف عشي.
You said the Americans.
Yes.
And you're still angry.
Yes.
Everybody asks this question. Would Iraq have been better without the change? And her reply to that question is, I don't care about Saddam, I care about my family. Without the invasion, I wouldn't have lost my family. It might be better for other Iraqis now, but for me, it isn't. The cheerful chatter of students at Baghdad University, walking past a campus snack bar with Real Madrid football posters at one end of it and Barcelona badges at the other. The last time I came here 5 years ago, there was intense distress and fear among the staff and the students. American troops in heavily armoured and armed vehicles were all over Baghdad. There were violent attacks by insurgents and chilling sectarian assassinations. Bodies floating in the Tigris River, shot in the back of the head.
If someone fails, if a student fails, we are afraid that something will happen to us. I may be killed.
Revenge?
Yes! For giving her a low mark.
We received many letters of threatening us to...
An envelope with a bullet to the teachers.
Can you call the police when such a thing happens?
Of course not! Let them protect themselves first.
Let them protect themselves, yes.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, believe me.
Things are out of control. Now I feel so angry at everything. We don't trust anyone. We don't trust anyone. We don't trust anyone. I'm sorry.
Baghdad University in 2007. She was apologizing for refusing to let me have her phone number in case I and it fell into the wrong hands. One teacher did trust me with her number, Dr. Rufeda Kamal.
At that time, we were bathing every day. This is a habitual activity expressed in the past progressive, but...
This year I went back to see her and her class of 2013.
Okay.
There's a wonderful, cheerful, happy mood in here today.
Yes.
The last time I came here, most of you were crying about threats, about bullets coming through the post.
Yes.
Have those days gone now?
Yes, we hope so. We hope so. Yes. In fact, to a certain extent, yes. Excuse me?
Yes. What's your name?
Sally.
Sally?
Yes.
Salaam alaikum, Sally.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. We are fighters. We have to move on. We have to keep on going because life will not be better if we don't.
Of course.
What do you remember of 2003 and the invasion by the Americans and by the British?
Yes.
I remember I cried. And it was devastating because they had no right to come and take my country away from me and act as if it is their country. It was an invasion. They invade even our lives, our beliefs, our... I don't know what to say. We have sacred things. We are Muslims. When a stranger comes to our home, we have to cover ourselves because we are Muslims. And they just come and open the door and...
Break the door.
And there are so many terrible things that they have done to women and to men, and it is preposterous.
I saw and heard Americans screaming instructions in English, kicking doors in, or crashing tanks through garden walls. Tanks with messages like adrenaline rush stenciled onto their barrels. But most Americans that I spent time with did not behave like that. This was U.S. Army Sergeant Oscar Claudio from Hollywood in Florida speaking to me in 2004.
In the past, I used to think not too highly of these people because out of ignorance, you don't know. And when you're actually spending time with these people and I'm seeing how these people are, these very family-oriented people, it's because it's a stereotype that all people from here are, evil criminals. They like to kill and everything else. And when you actually come and you experience, you say, wow, they're just like us. Love to eat, love to talk and joke around and have a good time.
Oscar Claudio and some American soldiers were disarmingly candid. One told me, we came here, we broke a lot of stuff, and we'll be the laughingstock of the world if we leave before we fix it. More than 4,400 Americans and 179 British military were killed in Iraq. And, well, the total number of Iraqi dead is still disputed, and so is who killed them. Civilian deaths over the past 10 years have been estimated at somewhere between 120,000 and 900,000. Killed by coalition forces, Iraqi army and police, Iraqi insurgents, suicide bombers, and al-Qaeda. There have been more than 1,700 suicide bomb attacks, and 700 al-Qaeda fighters have been killed since 2003, according to the Iraqi Defense Ministry. Shocking figures, but history has a hard heart, and may reach an unsentimental conclusion about the agony that Iraq has endured over the past 10 years. Back at Baghdad University, here's the head of the Women's English Language Department, a man, Dr. Jabar Al-Zubaydi.
10 years nowadays is not a long period in terms of constructing societies and histories. Usually societies, when they go through total change from dictatorship to democracy, definitely chaos is expected, turmoil is expected. But I believe today is better than yesterday. And this is the historical determinism of life.
This is the center of Baghdad's book trade, Al-Mutanabi Street, named after an Iraqi poet of 11 centuries ago, who's notable for, apparently, coining the phrase, the warning, if you see the teeth of the lion, don't imagine that he's smiling at you.
Mutanabi Street is literature street, politics street, is capital of Iraqi literature.
Mutanabi Street's had to be reconstructed over the past few years because here in 2007 a car bomb exploded, killing 30 people and injuring 100 more. Books are not the only reason for coming to Mutanabi Street. This is another main goal for many of the people who come here on a Friday. It's Sharbenda Cafe. There's a bird in a cage suspended from the ceiling. There are gilt-framed photographs of old Baghdad and people in Baghdad from long ago on the walls all around. And the room is full of men, only men, sitting on old-fashioned bench seats with small tables in front of them, drinking glasses of tea, smoking hubble bubble, and talking. This is not quite the old Baghdad cafe that it seems. It was rebuilt after being severely damaged by that bomb, which exploded just outside in Mutanabi Street in 2007. The bomb killed four sons of the owner of Sharbenda Cafe, Haji Mohammed, and one of his grandsons. At first, he wouldn't speak to me. He thought I was American. He tells me that since his sons died here, his stability has gone. But he's now responsible for their widows and for 11 grandchildren who have no fathers. So he has to be resilient for their sake.
What do you think about the Americans?
He says he once sent a message to George Bush. When you're on your deathbed, you should remember me. On Judgment Day, Jesus will be on my side, not yours.
Would Iraq be better now if there had been no invasion, no occupation, and Saddam was still here?
His answer to that, just two words, definitely better. Haji Mohammed, Sharbenda Cafe, Mutanabi Street, Baghdad. And as he finished talking, his eyes welled up.
Hello, BBC.
Hello, Salam, BBC.
How's business here?
Alhamdulillah, shukur, kulli ziyan hnane.
He says it's really, really good, thank God. How many Chevrolets have you sold today?
A lot of them. Maybe four.
Really? Already? Yeah. And it's only 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There's an astonishing new building right here in the centre of Baghdad, next to a rather tatty, rundown block of flats. There is a huge plate glass-sided showroom stretching up nearly to the height of the third story of the block of flats, and it's a motor car showroom for the General Motors Company of the United States.
Here you have the GM brands, including Cadillac, Chevrolet, and GMC, with the genuine spare parts, with a talented and highly equipped teams and crews to keep the customer satisfied.
This is the company's sales administrator, Ghada Al-Rashid.
Really, starting this showroom and the work here, it's really an event. The security situation is different. People are feeling safe. By the way, even the way we dress, even the way we act, we were really worried and scared from insurgents, from terrorists. Compared to 2005, 2006, 2007, it was a disaster. We may get even beheaded if they see us without scarves.
You're talking about women covering their heads. You choose not to cover your head, and now you feel safe.
Yes, it's true. For now, I don't wear it at all.
Freedom.
Freedom, yes.
I was in my office down a little side street, 200 meters from here, mm-hmm. 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. There was such a big explosion. 8 people were killed in Kahraman Square, which is 100 meters from here. Mm-hmm.
This era, it was terrible. You had 2 explosions in the same hour. But for now, we have 2 explosions in 1 week. It's the difference.
Where I come from, 2 explosions in 1 week would not... Everybody's laughing. 2 explosions in 1 week would not be acceptable.
Sure, right. Okay, but they are working on this, I think.
But real security is a city without the need for checkpoints, isn't it?
Sometimes you have to hold your armor with you until you feel that there's no danger at all.
So many Iraqis have this infectious, optimistic attitude. Mm. What's your secret?
Maybe it is something innate in our characters. If you have all these dead people, does that mean you should suicide or you should shrink in your place and never leave it nor communicate with the others? Now, you will feel sad for some time, you will feel broken for some time, but tomorrow is another day.
Hadar al-Rashid, selling Cadillacs in Baghdad. This was a cafe in Baghdad in 2006. The owner, Abu Rahman, was lamenting the shortage of water and electricity and the suicide bomber who'd killed 4 people in here a few months earlier when the customers got fed up with him being so serious. They say he's a country bumpkin from down south in Amara. And there's delight when they offer me a puff at the hubble bubble and I draw the smoke in deeply and exhale. And it's time to say goodbye. And thank you.
Assalamu shukran.
Hospitality and good humour in adversity. The relative peace which has come to Iraq now is still fragile. Many Sunni Arabs who felt marginalised and oppressed since the fall of their protector Saddam are calling for an Iraqi Arab Spring to rebalance the Shia-led government in Baghdad so that it better represents all of the people. Beyond the magnifying glass of television news, Iraq is a nation of kind, generous, hospitable, and resilient people. If this had been better understood by the countries which invaded in 2003 without a plan for what to do next, there would have been less violence, fewer tears, and much more of that infectious Iraqi laughter. I'll be back with part 2 of this BBC series, After Saddam, at the same time next week. My name's Hugh Sykes, and the programme was recorded and produced by James Fletcher.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. The details of them all go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.